My name is Phil, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. I got this call earlier in the week by Chris Gates on behalf of Austin Recovery, and I thought to myself, where can I hide this phone? And I thought, well, I could throw it in the toilet, and no, I'll just stick it under my pillow. And I heard it ring a couple more times, and I looked at it, and I realized that I needed to answer that call and come do this thing, because that's what we do. One thing I've learned from this program is that the only people in life that we have to get even with are the ones that have helped us, and Austin Recovery has definitely helped us. I started out, like I said, my sober date 6/17/2015, and what got me into the rooms was court, basically. Before that, I started doing drugs when I was about 15 years old. Pretty much anything I could get my hands on. I wasn't trying to escape from anybody. My childhood was good. My parents stayed together. I didn't have anything like that to blame them on. There wasn't any abuse. I liked to party. I liked to have fun. That's what got me into drugs. I liked to be in an exclusive crowd. I liked being in the club. Not only did I like being in the club, I liked being the leader of the club. And that worked for far too long because I got good at it. And after high school, I went to college, became a DJ, had plenty of access to a lot of drugs, and a lot of people telling me I was doing good. And I guess at the time, I probably thought I was doing good, too. It certainly appeared that way to me. Later on, after DJing for a while, I had the opportunity to start a band, and that's when things got interesting. We could do this all over the country and around the world. And it would not be unusual to drop acid and shoot fireworks in the van and maybe show up to the gig. You know, we did that for quite a while. And I got into sticking needles in my arm and pretty much whatever you would put in them. I found myself flatlining in San Francisco on tour. Woke up in a shower and then on the way to the hospital. Detoxed to the next morning. They had to clear the bed because they had another person coming in. It was not an unusual sight in San Francisco. So I quit heroin for about 2 weeks. I found myself with the needle back in my arm, finishing the tour. Not long after that, I found myself in the recording studio sharpening needles on the matchbook because we didn't have a needle exchange back then. Everybody had their syringe marked. We were waiting on the man. Somebody had to do the dirty work, and that's what I did. I went in the bathroom and sharpened all the needles, waited for the man to get there, and just hoped all the needles ended up back in the same hands. So after that, being in a band for a while, it became my job identity. That's who I was. I was employed. That's what my job was to entertain people. And as part of that job description, I felt like doing drugs to perform, that was part of it. If I didn't do drugs, I would lose my job or maybe not be able to perform as well. So I continued drug use, lost a lot of friends, lost a lot of bandmates along the way. That wasn't enough. Lost so many people close to me, and I still kept going. I just figured, you know, it was their time. And it was just as easy to look at it back then because it wasn't mine. Because that's what I was focused on, was me. Luckily, the police didn't put up with me as much as I did. And I ended up in jail several times. And if it wasn't for them, I probably never would have made it to Austin Recovery. As a matter of fact, when I got there, I didn't want to go. I ended up in this parking lot, parking my vehicle, shoving a half a gram of meth up under the steering wheel so when I got out, I'd be able to get high. You know, and I went to Austin Recovery, and I slept it off for about 2 weeks and blamed everybody. It was the court's fault. It was my counselor's fault. I had written 5 grievances on my counselor. And fortunately, I had some guys that were in it with me that were doing it for the right reason. They were tired of it. And I thought to myself, you know, this might be a good time to wring out the mop, 35 years of drug use nonstop. Maybe something else might work for me because I'd been homeless for a couple of years, living out of my truck, parking at McDonald's and sleeping on the back tailgate. you know, hanging out at Tent City and just whatever I could do to convince myself I had important things going on. You know, I was going to get it back together any minute. But fortunately, the courts opened my eyes to that and they forced me into this thing. So I didn't go willingly, but I found willingness while I was there, willingness to open my eyes and try something else. So it was pretty easy at that point once I decided that I was going to see what everybody else was doing, what it was all about. I got the willingness, and surrender was easy enough because I was broke. I was broke. My car had been illegal. I had gotten so many tickets and ended up in jail for so many stupid things that it was just a revolving door for me. And not only did I need that piece of paper when I got out, I started to realize that that wasn't my only problem. That wasn't going to solve everything. It was going to solve one thing. It was going to keep me from having to do jail for that charge. But it wasn't going to keep me from going back to jail. It wasn't going to put a roof over my head. It wasn't going to make anybody care about me. It wasn't going to make me care about anybody else anymore. So once I surrendered, that was about as far as I got in treatment, to be quite honest, because then I got hard-headed again. I had a problem with God. I didn't like the way people used the word. I didn't like the singularity of it, and I didn't like the Christian take on it. So it was going to become a while for me but I was willing still to keep trying this thing. When I got out, I got into a sober house because the people that helped me get into treatment, they told me that's what I needed to do. And the one thing I realized in treatment was I needed to do what some people were telling me to do, because doing what I wanted to do hadn't been working. It hadn't been working for quite some time. I'd been surfing the drain for a while. It had long dried up. So part of doing what people had asked me to do was IOP. I didn't want to do IOP, but it was free. They paid for it. They suggested, let's do it. So I did it. I did IOP. I moved into sober living. I didn't want the rules that sober living had to offer. But that's kind of ridiculous in retrospect, because the other alternative was living out my truck again, which once again wasn't legal. Had drugs in it, ready to do. The alternative was not a smart one. And believe me, I hadn't started making smart decisions just yet, but I was willing to listen. So then I had to tackle the God thing. What's up with this God thing? Well, I started looking into some of the Buddhist recovery groups and stuff like that and seeing what these guys had to offer. You know, how do you explain this to me, man? What is this higher power of my understanding? The only thing I understand about my higher power, I don't have to understand them. I don't have to. I can just know that when I do the right things, it works. You know, and that started working for me. So I still can't tell you what God is. I still can't tell you what my higher power is. But I do know that I have one, and he's worked for me, and it's worked for me. I also had heard in a room somebody said something about they loved everything about the program except the God part. And somebody said, well, you love everything about the ocean except the wet part. And it's like, that made a lot of sense to me. You know, it's like, that's about where I was at, you know. And of course, it sounds as ridiculous as you hear it right now. So it's like, I had to change that. I had to believe in something. I still can't tell you what it is, but I do believe. Then we're turning our life over to the care of God. You know, it's hard to be humble when you like to talk shit. Yeah. You know, and I like to talk shit. Even in my sobriety, I can't help myself. I try to keep it few and far between. I try to keep it somewhat believable. So then we get up to the hard part. Then we got to decide what's wrong with us, right? Not that we could do anything about fixing it, but we got to figure out what's wrong with us. So I've got to take an inventory of my defects. Well, that's going to be a long list, and I don't really like that. I don't like it when other people tell me what's wrong with me, much less me having to do it. You know, so you write that list down, and you realize that one thing I realized with my defects is I liked a lot of them. Some of my defects were cool. They helped me get by. They helped me survive for a while. You know, but this was a new thing. This was a change. This was a life change. So I had to put those things aside. You know, get rid of trying to please everybody. Try not to be that adult child. You know, try not to just do things for what people expect of me and what they want me to do, but do things for myself. Do what God wants me to, whatever that may be. So then we want to remove our defects. Well, that's easy. You know, I want to get rid of a lot of weight because I've been carrying a lot of weight. I found myself in another fellowship because of my codependence issues. And a lot of my fourth step was dealing with relationships and not the intentions of hurting people, but having hurt them because of neglect. Going out with people where the love had been lost for a long time and just dragging it out till somebody cheated on the other and things just got worse and there was nothing to do but break up or get evicted. Evicted, that worked a lot of times too. We're made a few little notes here. Like I said, this is my first time doing this, so thanks for putting up with me. So like I said, I had a hard time with my higher power. I still do at times. I lost my mother this year in August, which I did not want to be part of my story. When I was in this room, I believe probably about a year ago to right now, I heard somebody speaking that had lost their mother in early recovery or had about a year of recovery, and I thought, I don't want that. And sure enough, that did end up being part of my story, and it was a huge loss to me and how to deal with that in sobriety. And all I can tell you is the same thing that I heard from the other speakers was I was glad to be present. I was glad to be there for a change. And 110% there, you know, that I was not vacant. I knew where I stood with my mom when she left. I knew exactly where we stood with each other, and that was a good feeling. It's a good feeling to be present. Am I going up till 10 till? Is that what we're doing? Five till, 10 till. Woo! Woo! Well, let's see. We may have an intermission here. See what other little witty things I wrote down. Thank God for the Travis County court system. Oh. What is it like now? What it's like now is I manage the sober house. Wow. I just got certified to become a recovery coach. Yeah. I get to show up and do things like this. I get to go to meetings. I get to see people that come up just like I did. I get to see people that are in treatment. I worked at a treatment center for a short time. I've been able to share this experience with a lot of people one-on-one. Had a lot of people reach out to me in the music community, which has really been touching because I certainly did a lot of damage to it when I was out there. You know, and it's nice to be able to give back. It's nice to see people in this room. And it's truly nice to be able to say things are nice and fucking mean it because I didn't for a long time. You know, I said a lot of stuff that people wanted to hear or what I thought they wanted to hear. I was that person that did what you expected me to do, even though common sense would tell you not to. I can tell you that it does get better, without a doubt. I did learn to do what people asked me to do. I've learned that I don't push against the stream, and I don't pull the stream. I just float with it. And that's been my experience, is to not struggle. There was a guy in treatment, I'm sure that you have all seen, that says something about a buy one, get one free universe. And I certainly learned from him, because he had said one thing that made a lot of sense to me long before I accepted the fact that I was going to get clean. He said, you can take 30 days to get rid of a bad habit, or you can take 30 days to create a new one. And for me, that was relinquishing struggle, because my experience was, when I was in treatment, my girl was out in the world using. We had an 8-year-old son together. It wasn't this fact of whether or not we were going to go on together. It was, how are we going to go on? How are we going to move on? How does this thing work? And when I got out of treatment, she was still using. And I learned to stay. First of all, any of you that have that same experience of another one that's out in the world, use it. I can tell you this. What my strategy was to stay connected. So when I got out, I let her keep my car. I let her drive. I went to meetings. I went to 2 or 3 meetings a day. I know 1 week I clocked in like 17 meetings to our sober house meeting. And that was not just for me. It was for the both of us because I knew that it was a good honor. As long as I made myself look better, maybe she would want that too. And if I was in the rooms, it'd be really hard for her to think that I was doing her wrong. You know, that's pretty much common sense. I was trying to repair myself. And so she did end up wanting it too. She went to detox. Took her down to OSAR. She went to detox. State funding just ran out before she could get into treatment. There was a 2 week gap. During that 2 weeks, she started using again. So we started it all over again. Got her back into detox. She got out. Didn't get into treatment because she didn't want to go to the treatment center that they wanted her to. And she ended up getting her hotel room kicked in and did 6 months of state jail. So she did get treatment. She participated in Celebrate Recovery there. And she's got a year sober now. Amen. She's living with our child and her parents. And I still manage the sober house. And we live separately for a reason. And that's so that we can both grow and give each other the space to grow without being on top of each other and trying to make it work as a unit yet. And I've been blessed to have that opportunity to be able to do it like that. But that freedom that we've given each other has had everything to do with it working, because right now she is becoming a responsible mom again. She has resumed that role of responsible mom, and our son is truly glad to spend the time with us when he has it. That's really been a growing opportunity. And I can just tell you, one thing I try to remember about my recovery is this equation of willingness minus ego equals acceptance. Because for me, acceptance has been everything. And if I can accept, I can deal with just about anything if I accept it. If I go to struggle with it or fight it, you can guarantee I'm going to find a way to make it a real big fucking deal. You know, and it's not going to be good. But by relinquishing the struggle, that really helped me a lot. And that man changed my life a lot. And he helped me look into AA and to look into finding a God and of my understanding, which I know nothing about, but I found it. You know, I'm not going to string this out too much longer because that's about what I got. But thank you for letting me speak. I wish I had more entertaining things to tell you, but that's my story and that's how it is. And if you stick with it, it does get better. You know, the one thing I did learn for sure is that I can't stay full today on the food I ate yesterday. So I keep coming back. I keep coming back and I keep this full. And everything's all right then. Thank you.